Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Iron Mountain, Michigan, and became the head basketball coach of Ishpeming High School. He then joined MSU as a graduate assistant, became an assistant to Judd Heathcote, and 12 years ago became the head coach. He's led MSU to four Final Fours, and he's won the NCAA championship in 2000. Six of his former assistant coaches are now Division I head coaches. His name? Coach Tom Izzo. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Coach Tom Izzo, who led the MSU Spartan basketball team to the NCAA basketball championship in 2000. Tom, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Well, thanks, Jack. It's an honor to be on.
Can we start by you talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, I did grow up in a small town, Iron Mountain, Michigan, which is right on kind of the border of Wisconsin. We're about 95 miles from Green Bay, and so I grew up a Packer Vince Lombardi fan back then. And I grew up to an immigrant family who had come over from Italy, and my grandfather owned his own shoe repair store. And so as my four uncles worked there and then 17 of us grandchildren worked there, it was a true family business and one where I think I learned a pretty good work ethic early in my career.
What did you learn from your mom and your dad?
Well, my mom was, a very, very good student. She was a nurse. She too came from a family of five. I think she instilled in me the fact that education is important. My dad didn't finish high school until he was 36 years old, went back to school. In fact, with the seniors and kind of graduated from Iron Mountain, he had joined the Army early in his, his late teens. But he did come back and finish up. I think I learned from him, Jack, that life isn't always fair, but you got to keep your nose to the grindstone, and usually good things will happen to the people that outwork other people.
What were your dreams growing up?
Well, like every kid, up there, I just dreamed of going to college because it wasn't something that everybody did. And that was my first dream is, to get to college. And then, I was a decent athlete in high school and played three or four different sports and came from an eyelash of getting to the state semis in basketball and had a very, very good football team. But the state playoffs were 1 year from existing then. So, of course, my high school and junior high school buddy was Steve Mariucci, and together the two of us found a way to maybe work with each other and push each other and help us walk on at Northern Michigan University and in our prospective sports and basketball and football, and kind of the rest has worked out for us.
Everybody in the States knows the two of you were best of friends. Which one of you were the better athlete?
Well, he says he is, and I say I am, but... in all honesty, Steve was a great athlete. I was a pretty good football player, maybe better than basketball, but he was a good track guy and a very good baseball player, and I did play baseball, but not to that level. But I think we kind of mirrored each other. We in almost all facets of our life, including our upbringing, and I think that's what made it easy. From Iron Mountain, Michigan, there weren't many guys that went on to play college sports, and even though it was Division II, there was him and I at Northern Michigan University. So we spent a lot of time together working out because there was no one else to work out with, unlike when you're from a bigger city.
To our listeners out there who are chasing a dream, a big dream, and being put down and told they can't do it, what advice would you give them?
Well, when I went to Northern as a graduate assistant right after I graduated, I was working on my master's. I took the head job at Ishpeming High School, and And, you know, people just, including my own mother, you know, why do you want to get into this? And I said, it's my dream. It's my goal. It's what I want to do, you know. And I had my degree in education, which I still utilize, but I wanted to be a coach. And my road was kind of rocky. I mean, I was 3 years as a, you know, I mean, as a small assistant making almost no money at Northern. And then I came down as a graduate assistant for three more years making $5,000-$6,000 a year until I was 29 years old. So I guess what I would tell people is, you know, you have to pay your dues. And I think everything in society right now is so quick fix that we're trying to get things done and without a process, you know. And the process is part of the learning. And the process, I think, helps form your real values later on. And even though the process was a little tougher for me, I don't think I would have the success I've had if I didn't go through that process.
For a young listener tonight that thinks they would love to be a coach, how do they get started, Tom?
Well, Jack, it's a little harder than it used to be. You can't have a graduate assistant anymore. And the guys that have gotten in now that I've helped get through have either done an incredible job in high school, which a lot of guys in Detroit have kind of worked their way up, I know, and I've tried to help some of them because I have an appreciation for what they're going through. And the other way would be when you're going to college, you know, try to be a manager, try to be a student assistant, because you're able to have those, and maybe get in with some coaching staffs, work a lot of summer camps. It is more difficult to get into now than it used to be, and yet, you know, it's still possible for those who are willing to pay their dues.
What makes a great coach?
You know, that's probably the toughest question at all. I just spent 3 days with John Gruden at the Buccaneers down in Tampa. I was down there for an AAU basketball tournament, and I went over and watched their practice in the morning when I had some off time. And, you know, and he talked about, you know, coaching commitment and coaching accountability and coaching work ethic is maybe a big key. So to do that, I think you got to spend time with kids. I think so often we don't spend enough time with them, and yet we expect to just tell them what to do. And I don't think you can do that. I think they got to believe in the program. I think you got to sell them on what it takes to be successful and be there for them. And, you know, I had a kid, Mateen Cleaves, and once I got him on my side, you know, I think to this day I'd die for him, and I think he would for me. And so I think to be a good coach, you really got to have people skills and build relationships as you do in anything in your life that is meaningful.
We're talking to Coach Tom Izzo, who has led his team to four Final Fours since 1999. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Coach Tom Izzo, who will begin his 12th season as MSU head basketball coach. Tom, I was with Ozzie Smith recently, and he was talking about great baseball managers, and he said a great manager gets his or her players to believe that they're better than they think they are. How do they do that?
Well, I think, first of all, they have to trust the manager, the coach, the parent, the president of the company, whoever it is. I think there has to be a trust factor, and that goes back to our last part where we talked about, you know, spending enough time so that people do trust you. The second part of that would be just constantly pushing guys. I think most of the time my job is I have guys write down their goals, and then I tell them, now, are you going to give me a license to push you to achieve those goals? And I think that's what a good manager's job is, to help a person achieve his goals, not my goals. You know, I think if I just say, hey, I want to win a national championship, let's go, I don't think I'd ever win one. If I'd say, hey, what do you want to accomplish? And it might be to graduate, to be an NBA player, to win a national championship. And then I go back with, okay, I think I have a blueprint to help you achieve your goals, which inevitably will help me achieve mine. So I guess pushing guys and making them believe, you know, sometimes this day and age, you know, as I always say, some guys get to dream it, and I feel like I've gotten a chance to live my dream, and that's what I try to sell to my players.
Coach Bear Bryant, said this: if anything goes bad, I did it. If anything goes semi-good, then we did it. If anything goes really good, then you did it. That's all it takes to get people to win football games for you. Your thoughts?
Well, I think there's some truth to that. You know, I think sometimes we're all pointing fingers when we don't and aren't as successful as we hope to be. And I think a good coach or a good manager, a guy who can run an organization, has to point his finger at himself. He has to look in his own mirror and be able to take some blame. I mean, I think that's what the true great ones are able to do, is take some blame. And then I think you have to be able to share with others, and I think that's the together part. And then when guys accomplish things that are special, I think they usually work for it and deserve the credit. And I think sometimes, me included, we don't give them enough credit. So I do think they deserve some credit, as long as they can handle it, Jack. And that's, this day and age, that's sometimes hard. It's sometimes harder to handle success than it is failure.
Week after week, one common theme that I hear from guests on this show is that they all set goals, meaningful, specific goals. Not many people do that. What advice would you give to our listeners about setting goals?
Well, I do think it's critical, and I start every year with my players and my assistant coaches, and I have them take a 3x5 card and write down 5 things they want to accomplish that year. And, you know, everybody writes down they want to graduate or do well academically, I think more to please me than anything else, but that becomes one of them. And then the others could range anywhere from winning championships, being a better person, keeping his life intact, both athletically, academically, spiritually, socially. I've had about 10 different answers for those 5, to those 5 points. And I really think once you do that and you write them down, then you need people to help you, keep you on the right track. Because, like I said, the process is what kind of hurts a lot of people. They're not willing to pay the bill to have the process kind of go in a fashionly manner, and it takes time. And so I think people should write them down, because I think that way it helps you stay focused on tasks that you want to accomplish, because there'll be a million things that throw us off. And as long as we got those 5 or 4 or 6 things that really matter, I think it's a lot easier.
Tom, how can you get down to the level of 17 to 21-year-olds and still demand their respect?
Well, that is a fine line, because in our culture, you know, things change. I mean, it's long hair, it's short hair, it's bell bottoms, it's hip huggers, it's mustaches and beards and knots, it's jerry curls and corn rolls. It's every culture, every age group, tattoos and earrings. Everybody has his own thing. And what I've tried to do is realize that there's a lot of things that are just fads, and you got to adjust to them. I really do a lot with my managers and my student secretaries. I mean, even if I'm picking a uniform or how I want the floor painted, I constantly go to that 17 to 22-year-old group, and I try to stay in touch with them. I think that's the biggest fault, especially after you had some success. You start doing things in more of a dictatorship than a togetherness, and I think that's one thing that I've done a decent job on and try to do a decent job on is constantly, again, stay close enough to the players, have my assistants stay close enough that we understand the problems at this specific time. And, I think it's been one of our strengths here, and yet it's difficult to, deal with the 17 to 22-year-old problems, because I keep getting older, but the people I coach are staying at the same age all the time, and in this profession, that's a difficult adjustment to make.
When I go to the Breslin Center to watch a game, one of the things that impresses me the most is the Iz Zone. Can you talk about that? What is it, and how did it come about, and why do you do it?
Well, believe it or not, Jack, it started out as Judd's Jungle. It was 150 people, and it was just a student group to get the students involved. When I took over the job, we were averaging about 11,000 fans in a 15,000-seat place, and Mark Hollis, who was my assistant AD, and I were roommates at one time when he was a manager and I was a GA, and we talked about how we could improve. So we made the Izzone into the whole bottom, which was 20-some-hundred kids, and now we have the Izzone on the bottom and the Ozone on the top, which is away from the work their way down. And it's interesting because we've had up to 4,400 in this group, and you know, I can talk to them through email and about good things and bad things, and all in all, it's just another way for people in your program to take some ownership. And so we give them a T-shirt, we give them a name that they made up, not me, and we make them a big part of it. You know, when we won 53 or 4 games in a row at home, every time we were on TV, I think I gave them more credit than our team, because that home court advantage is very special. So it's been a great group. It's not always the easiest to manage because there's so many numbers, but I think it's one of the more unique groups because of the numbers in the whole country.
ESPN Dix Vitale has this to say about Tom Izzo, quote, "His communication ability separates him. He communicates well with players, with fans, with media, with alumni, with everyone. That's a special art to have. That's what makes him stand out, baby."
Well, I appreciate that from Dick. And, you know, he really did hit home on one thing that I think is maybe the most important area for any of us who are in any kind of leadership roles, and that is communicating. You know, I think this day and age with computers and text messaging and emails and all that, the art of communication is getting lost a little bit. And I remind my coaches of that, my players of that, each and every day. And if Dick thinks that, I guess that'd be as good a compliment as I could have, because it's an area that I think we're failing as a society. I think we have less people with great people person skills, and I think the ones that do have it are the gems of our society.
When we come back, we'll ask Coach Izzo about raising children. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Coach Tom Izzo, who has won 4 National Coach of the Year awards. Tom, what advice do you give dads about raising children?
Well, I'm in the middle of it, Jack. You know, I got a 6-year-old and a 12-year-old, and so I'm not sure I do a great job all the time either, but I do deal with those 17 to 22-year-olds for the last 20-some years, and as we know, that's a tough time. I guess, you know, to keep with the theme, I think dads got to stay in touch with reality, too. I think sometimes we get so busy, and we kind of get in our own worlds, and I guess the one advantage I have is I'm always in a young man's world, because I'm recruiting guys anywhere from, you know, 14 to 20, and that keeps me more grounded on what's going on. But I'd say to make sure that your son feels, or your daughter, you know, feels the same way, that the two of you maybe, and the rest of your family, but the two of you are in this to be successful at whatever you choose. I can't say I've pushed my kids like in sports or anything. I don't believe in that, and I think too many parents are trying to live through their kids, and I don't think that's necessarily great. I've seen that hurt a lot of people, but I think as my college coach used to say, moderation, you know, just keep things on an even keel, and moderation, and whatever you do is maybe the ticket.
Your future and your success are directly dependent on very young shoulders. How do you handle this?
Some days not so well. But, you know, I try to realize, as people berate and maybe get on these kids for doing this wrong or that wrong, I constantly say to myself, well, what did I do? Or how was I? And I think I keep a realism. You know, this day and age, there's so much scrutinization of these kids that, again, I try to be on their side when I need to, but I definitely don't tell them what they want to hear. I tell them what they need to hear. And I think once they know you're real, I think that's a big, big part. And I look back at some of the greatest coaches I've known. Of course, grew up with Vince Lombardi, and I mean, there's no doubt he was a taskmaster and tough, but no doubt he loved and cared about his people. And so I just make sure that I'm pushing on one end and I'm loving on the other end. And I think that's the best way to handle the 17, 18-year-old and get some results out of what both of you want to accomplish.
We're talking to Coach Tom Izzo. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're with Coach Tom Izzo, who is beginning his 24th season in the basketball program of Michigan State University. Tom, back in March, I was listening to Mitch Albom. He had you on. And you said that you have 13 young men from four or five continents, cultures all over the world. How do you bring them together as a team?
Well, it is interesting. We have, you know, one from Africa, we had one from Europe, one from Canada, one from the United States, we had one from Mexico. I mean, we really did have it kind of spread all out. And yet, understanding each kid is, I think, showing them that you care about, you know, their culture and what they're all about is one thing. But I try to sell that I don't care where you're from or who you are or what you do. There's a successful way and there's an unsuccessful way. And I think what I really try to do is, have more for dinner and cook a different kind of food and spend a little time with them, learn a little bit about, ask a lot of questions, and then kind of preach that, you know, I don't care where you're from. I had a great lesson. I went to Kuwait twice the last 2 years and had a great lesson learned over there by a sergeant that was from California and only 25 years old, been in the Army 7 years, and I asked him that question, how do you deal with all the different people you run into, age groups, men, women, you know, different cultures, and he says, Coach, we just sell them on, we got a job to do and a task to do, and really those other things are minor compared to the major task we have to do, and I think that's what I try to do. I try to keep them focused that if they want to accomplish their goals and their dreams, there's a way to do it no matter where you're from.
Let's touch further on that. Recently, you got back from your second trip to Kuwait for Operation Hardwood, Hoops with the Troops. Can you share this experience with us?
Jack, I said it the first time. It was a life-changing experience for me. That's kind of a dramatic and, a pretty strong statement. But there's no question after going back, it really proved the point even again that I have such a feeling for those guys and men and women over there. You know, when I went back this year, the first year we stayed in a hotel, and this year we got to stay in the barracks. And so we spent the entire morning, noon, and night with them, got up at 3:30 in the morning to watch the Pistons in the playoffs. And it was just incredible. And to see the discipline, the togetherness, the camaraderie, it kind of makes me feel ashamed of what goes on over here towards those troops, and instead of realizing that of all the things they really want over there, our support is probably top on their list. You know, when I ask them, can I get you a phone card? Can I send you some shoes? Can I do this? They'd all answer, no, just back us, man, just back us. And that was men, women, and like I said, being a reservist war, you had 18 to 60-year-olds, and it was, I'm really proud to be an American when I look at what they accomplished. And the national anthem, Jack, will never mean again what it means to me now. I mean, it always meant something. But after going over there, I hear that thing play now, it brings chills up and down my spine.
We've been screaming because it's been in the 90s this last week or two. How hot was it over there, Tom?
Well, to be honest with you, it was 120 degrees. Every day that I was there, 115, 120, and the first year that I was there, it was 130, 32. And, you know, when you start talking about those troops that put anywhere from 45, 50 to 120 pounds on their back, they're fully armored, it just gives you such an appreciation. And it's one big sand trap over there, too, Jack. If you're a golfer, I'll tell you what. There's a lot of sand, and that thing's blowing all the time.
So, No water, though, right?
No water except in the bottles. And, you know, I think every time I walk somewhere, somebody said, I never seen so many cases of water. And yet they'd be by refrigerators every 20 yards, it seemed like. And yet never were they cold, because by the time they put them in, somebody else was taking them out. And somebody was reminding you, keep drinking, keep drinking, keep drinking. So it is a special situation, and I said I have great respect for those guys and admiration, and the women over there are phenomenal, and I'd go back again in a heartbeat.
Can you share with us the life of a student athlete today, their schedule, their pressures, et cetera?
You know, Jack, I feel sorry for the student athlete a little bit. You know, everybody talks about the scholarship they get and the things, but boy, this day and age, you know, with the internet and the way people can, Photoshop things. If a guy goes out, he can just, he's under such scrutinization. I'm not sure it's always fair. And then when you add in the academic, issues that we have, and in other words, a normal student can graduate in 5-6 years. A basketball player, for the most part, has got to do it in 4 years, because most of my guys either are playing in the NBA or playing over in Europe. And we have to get them graduated, which means they have to go to summer school, and they just have to go to school around the clock. And it's difficult. And then the pressures of the game. I mean, there's pluses, of course, but it's not all what you see on TV. I can promise you that. There's a lot more that goes into it. And an average schedule for a kid during the day is school, study halls, practice from 3 to 6, sometimes individual tutors at night, meetings with your team at night. It's a pretty much a full day. It's probably not at all what the average person thinks it is.
When you hear of some young person that wants to quit school, what advice do you give them?
Well, you know, I really sell the education, because right or wrong, I mean, it is a ticket. You know, they say it's just a piece of paper, but the piece of paper opens a million doors. And I think if you find yourself quitting in things, you know, that's what you become. And so there's been a lot of kids that I've talked out of quitting, some that are not even athletes and just come by the office. And I tell them, it's not going to be easy. Even most things that are worth anything aren't easy. And if you can battle your way through it, maybe a couple of years that are tough are going to lead to 50 years that are a lot more pleasant.
Recently, a few years ago, Tom turned down a $15 to $20 million offer from the Atlanta Hawks. When we come back, we'll ask him why. I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Crisula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Coach Tom Izzo, who was courted by the Atlanta Hawks for an estimated $15 to $20 million package. Tom, why did you turn it down?
Well, Jack, that was a difficult thing for me. I mean, we just won the national championship. I love the fact that I thought we had another team coming back capable, and we did get back to a Final Four. But, you know, my buddy Steve Mariucci was, by then he was the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers, and, you know, we had kind of, I guess, in a positive way, competed throughout our whole lives, and this was my chance to get there too. But, you know, I got some advice from people and help from people. Magic Johnson even, you know, gave me, you know, some advice that, hang in there, build what I want to build. Look into things I want down the road, but don't be jumping at anything. Figure out what you want to do and know the difference between the different kinds of jobs. And I just, as dumb as it sounds, because coming where I came from, I mean, $15 million, $20 million would buy the UP. It was difficult for a day or two, but then I realized it just wasn't exciting. I mean, it wasn't after the thrill of the money. It wasn't exciting. And I sat up one night and I just decided that's not what I wanted to do. I felt like I still had some things to accomplish at Michigan State, and it was a good decision for me. And yet I have great respect for the NBA coaches. I've gotten a chance to to meet some great guys and see the job Joe Dumars has done down there and see all those coaches and Rick and Larry and, you know, of course, now Flip. So I've learned a lot in the meantime, but it just wasn't right for me, Jack. And so I'm here and hopefully still trying to win another national championship.
How has your life changed since winning the NCAA title in 2000?
Well, it does change, and you know, and it's kind of funny because that year I went out to California with Mateen Cleaves, who was a finalist for the Wooden Award, and I'm on the committee, and John Wooden, of course, had dinner with us, and when he walked up to me, he said, "Welcome to the fraternity of 40," and I looked at him dumbfounded, like, "What are you talking about?" At the time, I was the 40th guy, different guy, to win a national championship, and I kind of said, "Wow," you know, that kind of hit home a little differently than just winning it. And you know, I think the hardest thing when you have success is learning how to balance your time because you have a lot more people pulling at you. And sometimes I've done a great job of that. Sometimes I've done a real poor job of that. And so that's a never-ending task that I continuously work on. But it changed, and yet I don't think it changed me. At least I hope not.
You've led your team to 4 Final Fours since 99. You've won 4 regular season Big Ten championships since 98. You've won an NCAA championship. You've set the bar very high. What's the key to keeping it there?
Well, that's been the hardest thing of all. When people ask me, is it harder to get there or stay there? And for me, it's been harder to stay there only because, you know, I think along with it, I've lost, you know, now 5 players that are 4 of them freshmen and sophomores that have left early for the NBA, and keeping the continuity, the 6 coaches that I've lost to Division I jobs, which is also part of my job to help them fulfill their dreams. So it's been successful in that respect. I think we've had 12 guys in the NBA since 2000. I mean, those graduated, you know, a huge percentage. All those things are pluses. But there's there is a price to pay, and it's easy to get complacent, and I think that's where I look back on my father and my uncles and how I was brought up and who I worked for in Judd Heathcote. He never lets me get complacent, so I think I've done a decent job of handling success, but it is an effort each and every day because so many people are telling you how good you are, but there's so many people trying to knock you off that pedestal that it's a fight. And when I was down there this week with John Gruden, he was talking about how they went from the world championship in 2002 to, you know, not even making the playoffs, I think, the next year. And it's difficult, but it's one of the challenges that I enjoy about this job.
What advice would you give to our listeners about handling defeats and setbacks?
Well, it's easy to say, you know, just keep on trucking. But some of the defeats and setbacks are seem, especially at the moment, to be the most critical, you know, of your life, and especially if you put a lot into it. But as they say, that, you know, the sun will shine the next day, and I think if you have the ability to handle defeat and setbacks, it does make you stronger. You know, I mean, I hate to be cliche, but it really does. And handling adversity, I think, is the key for all successful people. Because as I tell a player when I recruit him, you know, I don't care how smart you are, I don't care how good a player you are, and I don't care how successful socially you are, the day's going to come when your girlfriend dumps you, you flunk your math test, and you go 1 for 11 from the field in the game that night. And it's going to happen to every one of you, you're going to have to rely on me to be there to help you, but you're going to have to learn how to deal with it, because that'll be the real telltale line on whether you'll reach your ultimate goals or not.
One of the many things people marvel about you is that you've stayed humble. How have you done it?
Well, I think I have. Once in a while, I guess, I could argue with myself and say no, but I think I have a great appreciation. Judd Heathcote taught me a lot about the media, you know, realizing, I mean, there's times I get frustrated, but realizing they have a job to do, they have bosses. I think I try to realize that, you know, everybody has a job to do, and whether it be the parent, whether it be the player, whether it be the media, whether it be the president, and trying to keep that in check and in balance and understand it is, I think, what keeps you humble. Because I've been at the top, I guess, But I've been at the bottom, too. You know, I missed a free throw when I was in high school that would have sent my team to the quarterfinals with a second left. And so I learned what failure was like early. And winning a championship, I know what success is like. And so now I'm trying to make sure, Jack, that I don't hit the failure side of it, that I continue working towards the success side of it. And I think that's what keeps me motivated.
Another of your attributes is that everything you do is first class. What do you say to a person that says, when I get successful, I'll do things classy?
Well, I think there is a classy way to handle everything. And, you know, I think this day and age, you know, sometimes, again, we're looking for shortcuts and other ways to do it. And like I said, I try to break down all aspects of my job, whether it be social, whether it be academic, whether it be the basketball part, whether it be the dealing with the media, try to break it all down. And we have huge staff meetings with all the people that are involved with me, and I think that's been a big part of my success is I keep people around me that are motivated and have dreams and goals, and I just try to continually be around championship people and having championship efforts.
You've created a winning program. What would you say to the people of Detroit, the people in Michigan? We're down. How do we get back that winning attitude?
Well, I think that might be the question of the day, if you ask me, because there's no doubt, you know, in a state and all the things, I just think we got to rally together, you know. The old, again, cliche, you can get more done with a fist than one finger. You need people, and people help people. And I think everybody thinks they can do things on their own and by themselves. I shouldn't win a national championship by myself. In fact, I had more help than probably most human beings had. And when you do that, though, it's fun because you're sharing it. You know, you're getting it done together. It's special, and you know, sometimes I get sick of politics. Sometimes I get sick. I say let's do what's right, not what's politically right. Let's do what's really right. And I know that's hard, but I guess that's what I'd say to our state. You know, let's go at it together, and I think we can conquer anything. And if we do that,
we have 45 more seconds. Last question: what advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Well, what I really would give to them is, you know, set your goal and don't be afraid of it. You know, I think sometimes I remember telling my mother, you know, I want to be a coach. I want to coach at the highest level, you know, and even she kind of laughed at me, you know, and yet when I had the success I had and took her places, it was special to share. And I would just stay to the task, too, because I think so many times people can kind of steer you the wrong way if you aren't really strong in your conviction of what you want to get done. So I'd say dream big and work to achieve those dreams.
Tom, thanks for all the thrills you've given hundreds of thousands of us in the state and also the manner in which you do it.
Well, Jack, thank you for having me on. This was definitely one of the more enjoyable interviews I've ever taken part in.
Please join us next Sunday evening. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn.